Legion of News! Only on Cascadia.fm.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A stolen food cart reopens for business, a SWAT team invades an Oregon home, and there's a new silo on the roof of Lompoc Brewing.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, prepare yourselves for the loving embrace of Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, January 28th, 2011. A tip led Oregon State Police SWAT team to concentrate their search for shooting suspect David Durham on a home in the Bayshore neighborhood of Waldport on Wednesday night.
Durham? Sorry, no, that doesn't work.
Never mind.
Not so much.
No, forget that.
Cars going in and out of the neighborhood have been searched by a small group of officers since Sunday night, but around 6:15 Wednesday, several police officers converged on one street and eventually surrounded a home. State police say the maneuver was in response to reports of a suspicious person in the area. It was one of more than 200 tips they've investigated during the past few days. One resident said, "It makes me feel like I hope they found him. It would be a great thing if this would be over with."
Okay, here's the thing about that sentence right there. That's one of those things. I don't want to start off today in another, like, it gets into another sort of grammatical land war. But that's one of those things that is either perfectly and totally correct in, like, a Dickensian sense, or it demonstrates almost no idea of how the English language operates. It's one of the two. Like, it sounds so unbelievably convoluted that it's either completely correct or wholly inaccurate.
I think it is actually correct, though.
Let's try it from the beginning.
It makes me feel like I hope they found him.
So, wait, but she doesn't actually hope, then, that she found him. She feels as though she were to hope. It's like a replica of hoping.
Yeah, but if you feel like you hope, aren't you indeed feeling hope itself?
Or are you method acting your way to hope?
Yeah.
Okay, what's the second half?
It would be a great thing if this would be over with. See, there's nothing wrong with that.
Now there's an extra preposition in there.
Yeah. After about 2 hours, the maneuver was called off because no suspicious person was found. Regardless, investigators still believe Durham is in the area, possibly hunkering down in a vacant vacation home in a coastal neighborhood.
Wait, is this the same place he was hunkering down yesterday? Has the location of the hunker moved?
I believe they're calling Waldport his general hunkering vicinity.
It's his headquarters.
They have just not found the specific hunkering location.
The exact location of the hunkering can't quite be known at this point. We believe he is hunkering westward at this juncture, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, no, hunkering implies staying in one place.
Well, to
So they have to kind of zero in on the actual hunker.
On the hunk.
Yes. Earlier Wednesday, by the way, they did find his dog, Huckleberry. So we're all happy about that.
Okay.
Yeah. The skyline in Portland's North Williams neighborhood is a little bit different after crews installed a new silo on the roof of Lompoc Brewing.
I swear to God, every time you say this, I think you're going to say Cylon. I don't know why.
No, you don't install Cylons. They install themselves.
That's only in Soviet Russia.
Cylons install you. No, what? Crews hoisted the 30-foot-tall silo onto the brewhouse roof Wednesday morning. It'll hold about 60,000 pounds of the company's base malt. That's a big change for the company, which has used expensive bagged malt for the past decade.
Don't care. There should totally be a farming robot called a grain Cylon.
Yeah.
Okay. Never mind. We can continue with the story now.
Write that down. This should save about 25 to 30% of their grain prices, said the owner, Jerry Fechter. It'll take about 3 years for us to pay the silo off with construction and engineering that had to go putting it on the roof.
Paying the silos off is always the hardest part because you got to figure out really what you can graft them with.
What do silos want, really?
I don't know, crankcase oil. You're listening to Legion of News. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday, January 28th, 2011. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. Coming up later on this hour, you got your entertainment news, also science on the march. Don't forget, you can get this program later on today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or legionofnews.com. You can also get it on your mobile device if you like, if that's your pleasure. It is mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said that she is deeply concerned about the use of violence against protesters in Egypt. Clinton says those demonstrators have a right to assemble.
We urge the Egyptian authorities to allow peaceful protests and to reverse the unprecedented steps it has taken to cut off communications.
Did you see that thing that they just unplugged the internet?
Yes.
Which is sort of impressive. I mean, I'm not for totalitarian regimes that strip people of all their liberties and rights and liquefy other protesters into a fine paste. It's wrong, I guess.
No, but we have talked about how, if the people are getting together via Facebook and rising up.
Just turn it off.
If you are a dictator, then, you know, why are you letting them have the internet in the first place?
I do have to say that here's the thing I really respect. I respect people who have authority and don't hesitate to use it. That's a thing that I can admire. Now, I'm not saying you should use that power for evil. Clearly, you shouldn't. But it doesn't matter.
Be consistent.
Yeah, but it's not even about being consistent. It's like, what is the point of having that power if you're not actually going to exercise it at some point? You know, it's like having a figure, it's like keeping one of your action figures in the case. I mean, you're not really going to be able to sell that at any point in the future for, to fund your retirement. Don't dwell in a land of illusions. If you buy an action figure, you should take it. I don't even care if Todd McFarlane signed the box. Take it out of there and pose it and put it in some sort of an action stance, like on a mantle at home. Otherwise, it's just a thing that is there for decorative purposes only, not unlike the apparently all-encompassing power of the head of Egypt.
Well, when I was in culinary school, I did a couple of different papers, on coffee and looking at how coffee is produced and also the history of coffee. And there was a time in history when coffee houses throughout Europe and Asia and where were very, very popular. And whenever you would get like a lot of coffee houses, you have a lot of people just gathering and hanging out and talking.
Right.
And they became hotbeds of political dissidents.
Revolution, Don.
So one of the first steps that the people in power had to do was go in and shut down the coffee houses. And essentially, this is the same thing, because, what is the internet if not one giant coffee house?
Just a bunch of people hanging around not buying anything.
Yes, and just yapping about stuff.
That's really all it is, and just staying there till all hours of the day and night playing trivia games. You really are right about that. That's what the internet is.
Clinton says the Egyptian government should allow peaceful protests to take place and reverse the steps they took to cut off communications.
Is this three or two?
This is two.
All right.
These protests underscore that there are deep grievances within Egyptian society. And the Egyptian government needs to understand that violence will not make these grievances go away.
Uh-huh. That's as she's like signing an order somewhere to have Julian Assange pushed through the wire screen until he's diced like an eggplant.
Clinton says the protests underscore Egyptians have deep grievances about their government. Well,
we continue to raise with the Egyptian government, as we do with other governments in the region, the imperative for reform. and greater openness and participation to provide a better future for all.
Here's the thing, is that there's certain places that need to be reformed with a bomb. That's really that's the thing that nobody will say out loud. Certain places need to be reformed all the way down to the ground until they are a sheet of glass and then started over. Egypt is one of those places, by the way.
So I guess what I get from Hillary Clinton from the statement is that as Secretary of State speaking on behalf of the United States, that we, the United States, are officially against people protesting. And I mean, people being slapped down for protesting.
I don't think they're being slapped down. Well, they're being slapped down with bullets.
And killed. We're against violently keeping our citizens in line.
I think it's a slapping of your body with lead coming out of the end of a gun. I don't even know that we're against that. Here's the thing about Hillary Clinton. Every time Hillary Clinton talks, she has that sort of firm but icy demeanor of a principal who clearly has something horrible in mind for you and is just going to see if she can, like, get you to grovel and make an apology before she has you stuck in summer school.
The problem with her tone, though, in the speech, though, is it puts me in mind of, like, there's a guy and he's beating another guy to death with his fists, you know, in an alley. And then there's another fellow standing there saying, you know,
I don't approve.
I don't approve of that. And you really ought to...
Can't you fellows find a peaceful way to resolve this?
Yeah, could you just listen to what he has to say and...
Let's talk it out, guys.
You shouldn't be doing that.
No, well, you know, I mean...
All right.
It's just one of those things where...
We could move on to something else.
Just having a whole thing inside my own head. I will just say that I spent a great deal of yesterday trying to avoid news about this because at some point in the story about Egypt, they would refer to Egypt as a strong and important ally in the region. Mm. When really, again, I mean, it's a nation of people that can barely use chairs, all right? I mean, let's have no illusions about that.
They have all the oil. That's what that means,
yeah,
right? They have all the oil.
I don't necessarily, but here's the thing. Here's why people always say that. As though that's the reason why we're friends with people. But clearly, as we've demonstrated, we don't have any problem just going in and taking a country. So I don't really even believe that oil is behind this, you know, because if oil was behind this, suddenly oil would be a lot cheaper now if oil was behind everything. Because guess what? We own Iraq. So they got lots of oil, too.
Well, it's not even just about oil, though. I mean, the super wealthy people in the super wealthy guys in Egypt also own vast swaths of multimillion-dollar American corporations as well. I mean, that's why they're our allies. It's because, you know, guys like Dick Cheney are doing business with them and their pals.
Well, I don't have any. I'm not disputing that. I'm just saying the idea that they are somehow. It's just that thing of we are then leveraged into talking about horrible, horrible people as though they're like our quirky next-door neighbor with a culture that it's important we understand.
Yeah.
And it's really not.
And we can't just come out and say, hey, knock that off.
Yeah.
What you're doing is wrong. We have to say, we would really appreciate it if you maybe stopped killing people like that. Because we'd like it if you'd stop.
Just go back to beating women. That's apparently acceptable.
Yeah.
We haven't ever said anything about that.
No, that's fine.
Yeah.
A popular food cart is reopening in Southeast Portland after the owner made major repairs due to vandalism. The Azul Tequila food cart was stolen on January 18th and then found the next day with serious damage. It usually sits at the A La Carte's food cart pod near the intersection of Southeast 50th and Division. Owner Alfredo Franco said he recently bought the custom trailer to boost his business, and it was surrounded by a locked fence at night.
Did he say it with like a huge waxed up handlebar mustache and like while putting his fingers together and shaking his hands?
Yes, and he wears a military uniform with epaulets and a chest full of medals.
They are taking my food cart!
He said he's grateful to have it back, but did not think his insurance would cover the about $10,000 in damage and stolen equipment.
What is his name?
Alfredo Franco.
So you just picture him. You just picture him looking like Salvador Dali.
A little bit.
You know, and so do not tip delivery boy. Thank you.
I think it's a Mexican food cart, and you're giving him an Italian accent.
Yeah, they're all Latin. Doesn't matter.
God. He said most of the equipment was brand new. It was something we were working a long time towards, so we could put it here. Then in just a few months, it's gone. It's devastating because the damage is going to take us a lot of time to replace these things.
Right.
This truck. It employs other people, so they're out of work right now. By the way, the news story I read, it actually used the word outa.
How, really? O-U-T-T-A?
And they spelled it wrong. They spelled it O-U-T-A. Outa.
Well, you could...
And I fixed it in my copy so that it was O-U-T-T-A.
Heard.
Because I'm a nerd.
Well, here's the thing. This is now like... I was going to say this is 2 days in a row, but really, let's be honest. This is now like 400 days in a row where we're on some sort of a language kick. But the thing is, if you spell, and don't get me wrong, I do it the same way. O-U-T-T-A is typically how I spell outa.
Mm-hmm.
But you really are adding a T there from nowhere. You are adding a T out of the blue because it's not like you're you are, in fact, doing the opposite of contracting two words. You are, in fact, putting two words together, dropping some letters, and then adding a second T for no reason.
And also, I would say that even if you are quoting someone in a news story, a journalist has no business using the word outa.
Yeah, no, that's ridiculous.
Much less spelling it incorrectly.
No, just don't. Yeah, don't. Please don't do these things. What is the name of the What is the name of the cart?
That is the Azul Tequila food cart, and that would be at the A La Carte's food cart pod near the intersection of Southeast 50th and Division. So go buy some food from him and help him start his business back rolling again.
Two things.
Unless his food is terrible, and then, like, you know.
And then you should scorn him.
Right.
And you should mock him publicly in the presence of others.
Make fun of his mustache.
Mamma mia, then they ridicule him a mustache!
And he's standing there going, I'm not Italian! What's wrong with you?
That's right. You know, people in Mexico aren't Romans, but, you know, they're Latin Americans. Explain that to me. No, seriously, explain that.
I'm having no more discussions with you about words and grammar and... things
then my plan has come to fruition. All right, there you go. That's old Rick beat the spirit out of him, Emerson, at work right there. I was going to say two things. One, let's give me a little credit for going all the way through the Egyptian story without ever talking like the Egyptian magician from the Jerky Boys thing, which is like so hard for me not to do sometimes. Where I just go, then they put a spear in my eye. Secondly, I didn't think in Portland you could have businesses with the name of an alcohol in the name of the business. Now, maybe they've revived that. I'm not trying to get anybody in trouble, but you see, that's the thing I thought the OLCC, I didn't think you could call it, like, what's it? Well, we're the beer hut. But I guess there's the beer mongers. So, yeah, again, maybe you can do that. I thought that there was a lot of, I thought that they were real hard asses about what you could publicly say or display in the name of your business in terms of an alcohol. Because there's a whole thing about what signs you can hang in the window.
Well, you know that tequila is also the name of a city in Mexico. It's not just the name of the alcohol.
I suppose beer is the name of a movie, too. You know, I guess you could make that argument. But it doesn't matter to me. I don't care.
I mean, tequila is called tequila because the cactus that it comes from is in the vicinity of the tequila area of Mexico.
Yeah, but I suppose if it were the Mexican Liquor Control Commission, that might matter. The OLCC doesn't seem to hew to logic or rationality of any form. But
although
maybe
if you call it Azul Tequila, basically you're calling it, you know, blue tequila. So that is the name of, you're basically implying booze. Then again, they're not staying on top of whether or not people can build, like, decks and roofs and install wood burning fireplaces and, you know, stuff outside their food carts. So what the hell?
Really, and the OLCC does seem to seem I think they have their hands full trying to keep their own members from being busted drinking and driving these days. Anyway, and looking like Gollum in mugshots.
And managing their, like, 47 different versions of their books that they no doubt have.
Well, you know, when I first...
Not that I'm implying in any way that they're shifty.
When I... well, they are. And crafty and cunning and good dancers. Here's the thing. When I moved here, actually, the OLCC was still so ass backwards that there was a Tom Likas event at the. It was, I think it was like the first 2 months after I moved here at the Aladdin. Likas was here and he was doing a show and they were doing something or other. But the Aladdin's a 21 and over venue, and because I didn't drive when I lived in San Diego, my license had lapsed when I lived in Utah. And I never bothered to get a California license, and then I was here, and so I was like two states away from having a valid license. Anyway, so I had an ID card though, and I think I got so I could, because I needed it to rent the apartment or whatever. So I got just like a real quick like state ID card. Wasn't like I made it at home.
No.
Wasn't like I was just there with like scissors, sort of going like Rick.
No, they are. Valid identification.
It's a piece of government identification, my name and my picture and everything. And I remember it was the weirdest thing because I had just moved here, going to the Aladdin to watch this and being told by the guy at the door that they would not let me into the Aladdin without a driver's license. And I said, but I've got a state ID card. And he said, I'm sorry, we don't accept that. And I said, but it is valid government ID. And he said, it doesn't matter. And I didn't know what the OLCC was. And he said, the OLCC requires that you have a driver's license, not a state ID card. And I said, so really, before you will let me into a place where they're going to serve alcohol, you need to know that I'm driving first. And he said, yes, that is improbably enough the case. And that was the case until 2004, where if you did not have a driver's license, a state ID card was actually not enough to get you into a bar. So if you actually had proof that you could not drive, if you had government proof that there was no way you could ever be drinking and driving legally, you were still not able to go in and booze it up.
They're
so
geniuses.
They're always about 17 years behind the curve, I think. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm, always 7 minutes ahead of the curve. Coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, we have your penis watch coming up today, also your taser watch, and Big Jim Willig will be in the studio today talking about the life and work of Mr. Drew Carey. That's going to be for Humor Me Comedy 101. We'll also have a clue number five. That is a clue number five for this week's EH vending contest. Here is Dawn Taylor.
A man walked into a Planned Parenthood clinic seeking treatment for a sexually transmitted disease, then let slip that he runs an interstate sex trafficking ring with minors and illegal immigrants. Planned Parenthood officials say that there were 8 such visits over a 5-day period this month, and in a letter to the FBI, they asked Attorney General Eric Holder to look into what they suspect are, quote, James O'Keefe-esque hidden camera stings. O'Keefe is a conservative activist who's risen to notoriety with his hidden camera videos. Organization officials believe the man is a member of Live Action, an anti-abortion group led by O'Keefe, one of O'Keefe's associates. A Planned Parenthood spokeswoman told Talking Points Memo the organization wrote to the FBI after noting a pattern that clinics were targeted in Washington, D.C., Virginia, New Jersey, Indiana, New York, and Arizona, and added that between the choice of sex trafficking ring and political hoax, everyone is hoping that it's a political hoax. I'm really not sure exactly what they are hoping to achieve by this.
I'm confused in many ways already. So a guy goes in to get, like, I don't know, warts blasted off of his penis and says, oh, by the way, I run an underage sex trafficking ring. That's not me, Rick Emerson, saying that, by the way. First of all, he inadvertently let it slip?
Yes.
How do you do this? Is that like, you mean to say you're a gardener? And then, but it's just somehow the syllables are so close that it comes out all wrong. Walk me through how they think it's a political hoax.
Well, I think what it is it's something that is being done to discredit Planned Parenthood
with
in
who?
Some way. With conservatives and with whoever.
No, but conservatives don't. But that's my question. It's like conservatives. It's not like conservatives are giving money to Planned Parenthood now.
Okay, let me find a story that gives a little bit more information. So here, in each case, a man would ask to speak privately with a clinic employee. And then if... Come on, Internet. There we go. And
you're not using that that .eg access, are you?
No.
That's been turned off.
Okay. Coming. The man would... They're saying that it's... I'm sorry. It's just all over the place.
No, thank you. You've really brought it into sharper focus for me.
What? Nobody is explaining this thing very well.
Okay. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. It's one of those days where I just...
The man would visit the clinics, presenting himself as a patient seeking treatment for a sexually transmitted disease, elaborating on a purported sex ring only after getting into a private setting with a staff member.
Right.
Because of strict patient privacy laws, Planned Parenthood is not supposed to reveal the man's suspected identity or his looks or opinion. So they said, you know, they take this very seriously, but I don't have any idea what the point of
all
this
right.
is.
Here's a little secret between you and me, Don. I knew that you probably weren't going to be able to figure it out, so I've already moved on in my head. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. The Rick Emerson Show coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. You can... Seriously, You got to tear yourself away from that. It's just leading into a land of frustration and agita. Penis Watch and Taser Watch coming up next hour. Also, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with Humor Meet Comedy 101 today talking about Mr. Drew Carey. Here is Dawn Taylor.
I dislike it when the news tells me things and then doesn't explain to me what the point is of what they're telling me. I find that annoying. So, news, you're on notice. Let's do our science.
Okay.
And remember, the news is on notice.
Okay. Somebody, by the way, just said, today is awesome already. I can't wait for science. Well, you know what?
Here comes.
You need wait no longer. So. He also suggested that from now on the government refer to shooting protesters as not shooting them, it's long-range pistol whipping.
Ah.
Well done.
A tiger in Germany has become the world's first to be given an artificial hip after a 3-hour operation by a team of vets that she only just survived. Girl, as the Malayan tiger at Halle Zoo in eastern Germany is known, had been in visible pain for close to a year because of problems in her right hip joint. Malayan tigers...
She had invisible pain?
No, she had been in visible pain.
Oh, okay.
Malayan tigers are one of the world's most endangered species.
Invisible pain would be my supervillain name.
But there's only around 500 of them in the wild.
Okay.
She's 8 years old, had a life expectancy of 20. So during the operation by 5 specialists, girl's heart came close to stopping, though. But anesthesiologist Mikhail Aleph was able to save her. She's now recovering in a separate enclosure back at Halle Zoo. And once a 6-week danger period when the new hip could dislocate is over, there's every chance it will last her the rest of her life. Artificial hips of the kind now in the tiger were first developed by Professor Pierre Montavon from the University of Zurich with the Swiss firm Kion and contain titanium for better performance and durability. They're first used only in dogs, but in recent years have also been implanted in humans. Girls was free of charge. A ceremony at the Kennedy Space Center marked the 25th anniversary of the Space Shuttle Challenger explosion. June Scobie Rogers is the widow of Shuttle Commander Dick Scobie, and she remembered that fateful day.
Like everyone watching around the world, we were stunned to see the unspeakable unfold right before our eyes. Could this really happen? No one believed it could happen.
Where were you when that happened? Did you see it happen live, or did you...
I did not see it live. I'm not sure where I was at the time that it happened, but I do...
That is one of those things that I... Because I didn't see it live either, but for the longest time, I couldn't quite figure out whether I had or not. And I have come to realize that I didn't, that we were actually in class, and a teacher came in and told us, she made the announcement, she walked into whatever grade I was in, and she said, by the way, you know, this has happened. Which I think was like around the same time that the Pope got shot. So it was just a whole weird time, because it was like twice in like 6 months the teacher would come in and explain that some horrible thing had happened. But then it was a thing that you saw so many times on television, like a billion times over the next 24 hours, that I think we all... It doesn't matter whether you saw it live or not. It is as though you saw it live. Not unlike the 9/11 thing. Like nobody really saw that happen live either. At least in the case of the first tower. But it doesn't really matter because the television just immediately burned it onto your brain. I mean, like the Rodney King tape, where it's just there forever.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of these memories, like the Challenger thing, the John F. Kennedy being shot. Where I was when Elvis died. I don't remember where I was when I heard a lot of these things, but I will never, ever forget 9/11 because that was one of those days where I was getting ready for work in the morning and I was upstairs and I turned on the TV upstairs and had no idea what was going on at first. I thought maybe is this like anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing or something? And when I realized what was going on, Patrick was downstairs and I called down the stairs. I said, turn on the TV. And he said, what channel? And I said, all of them.
Yeah, just pick one.
Yeah, it was.
Now that we've suddenly turned this into a 9/11 thing, I had actually, I had gotten up that morning and I checked my answering machine and Bruce Agler had just left me this message. It was really, in retrospect, not so bizarre, but he just said, well, I'm sure you've heard, you know, get to work as soon as possible. And I was like, oh God, who did they fire? And I just immediately assumed there was like some format change and I had to go find a cowboy hat or something and get to the office. And so I was just, and I didn't even bother to turn on the TV. I'm like, well, all right then. Well, see you later, honey. Bye. And I got in the car and I was driving across the Ross Island Bridge and I turned on Imus. Of course, you know, Imus comes out of New York. And I turned on Imus and it was Sid Rosenberg on the Imus show, who had not been able to get to work that morning. It was across. I think he was in his apartment where you would have been able to see the World Trade Center. And I just remember him saying, he was talking to Imus on the phone and him just saying, well, it's gone. And Imus said, well, what do you mean it's gone? And he said, well, it's just not there anymore. And I said, what do you mean it's not there anymore? And he said, the World Trade Center isn't there anymore. And I remember, I have the clearest memory of being halfway across the Ross Island Bridge and turning and literally turning and looking at the radio in the car as though that were going to give me any more answers, trying to figure out what the hell that statement... I was just like, I couldn't figure out what that meant. And it was the same thing with the Challenger disaster, because if you remember seeing that footage... that I think for a while they were unclear on the ground about what had even happened, because one of the, what are those, side rockets or whatever, one of the secondary or tertiary rockets, rather, continued to sort of go up, and you couldn't, because the thing separates, right? Isn't it?
Right.
It comes apart into several pieces, and they weren't quite clear about whether it had actually exploded or not, because there were still projectiles that were heading skyward. And I guess it was maybe those side rockets. And that was where it was like the O-ring or whatever was responsible. Yeah.
Well, Scobie says it's hard to believe it's been 25 years since the tragedy unfolded.
Jesus.
What should have been a day heralded for education turned to tragedy in a split second. Our loved ones were gone. Our nation grieved.
So that's what, 1986, and that was, and we figured out the other day that it was, I think it was the Columbia or something, was the second one, where there was some sort of a, where the missions themselves have been largely successful, but I think, two of the five, which maybe is one of the reasons why they're bringing the space shuttle program to a close, because if you look at it in terms of the number of shuttles, that you've got like 40% of the shuttles that end up just falling back to Earth in tiny little shards, that does not really foster confidence among the public, perhaps.
Well, a French architect campaigning for a new exploration of the 45-year-old Great Pyramid of Giza said on Thursday that the edifice may contain two chambers housing funereal furniture. Jean-Pierre Houdin, who was rebuffed 3 years ago by Egypt in his appeal for a probe into how the pyramid was built, said 3D simulation and data from a U.S. Egyptologist named Bob Breyer pointed to two secret chambers in the heart of the structure. The rooms would have housed furniture for use in the afterlife by the pharaoh Khufu, also known as... Yeah, I'm not even going to try with that one. Anyway, this fellow says he is convinced that there are secret antechambers in the pyramid, and he wants to find them. In 2007, Houdin advanced the theory that the Great Pyramid had been built inside out using an internal spiral ramp, as opposed to an external ramp, as has long been suggested. He proposed mounting a joint expedition of Egyptian antiquities experts and French engineers using infrared radar and other non-invasive methods to check out the hypothesis. The idea was denied by Egypt's antiquities department. A Canadian team from Laval University in Quebec will seek permission this year to carry out thermal imaging on the outside of the pyramid to explore that theory.
All right, I think we've just found another upside to just going in and leveling Egypt and just owning it ourselves, because then we wouldn't have to ask permission to be examining a goddamn pile of rocks. Seriously, could we go look at a bunch of stones? No. Why? You'll anger a spirit god or something. And then we'd have to say, well, fine, whatever. And then so then basically like photographing it from across a hill or something, trying to figure out what's inside of it, as opposed to just being able to go look. So I'm just saying, you know.
So the message of today's show is that Egypt, just bastards.
Yes, yes. Here's a great idea for a reality show. There should be a reality, like one of those niche reality shows, like on the Discovery Channel or something, or like a Mythbusters type show, where they just task some guys with building a pyramid.
Yeah.
And they just say, like, look, you can't use anything that they didn't have then. Because there's only two. Here's the thing about the pyramids that I find fascinating.
Do you get slaves?
Well.
Because, I mean, you know, that stuff took a lot of slaves.
No, probably not.
Yeah, see.
But, you know, you could get interns. I mean, and there's really not, you know.
It's kind of the same thing.
Really, I was going to say, you know, when in terms of payment, really, there's not a lot of difference there.
Speaking of which, we still need an intern.
Okay, let's focus for just a second.
Oh, sorry.
Here's the thing about the pyramids that I find. That's Dawn Taylor, by the way, who said that she wanted a slave. Rick Emerson, of course, doesn't endorse that viewpoint in any way. The thing about the pyramids that I find really fascinating is that there are only two schools of thought. The first school of thought is, well, it's this impossibly complex form of construction and architecture that they could not possibly have understood in any sort of an academic or mathematical sense, and that the stones are put together so close that you can't insert a piece of paper between them, and that nobody has any idea how they did it, so the great god Ra must have come down in a fiery chariot and built
space
it.
Space aliens?
Or space aliens, or that they had access to some different kind of mathematics that we haven't been able to discover because it's in pictograph form. The second school of thought is, well, of course you can do it. It's not that hard. Look, here's a diagram. This is exactly how you do it. Quit making such a big deal about it. And so only one of those things can be true. And that is a thing. This is not like the thing with Chopin and like what caused his hallucinations, because you'll never maybe know exactly how the Egyptians themselves did it, but you could, I think, figure out whether it is possible to do it with those tools. And so they ought to make that into a reality show. And aren't there other things like the pyramids that they constantly say, like, well, how did these primitive peoples, like the Nazca lines?
Yeah, and like the Mayan structures.
Yeah, and they say, well, like, how is it? Well, we should just make some guys try it. Why hasn't anybody ever done that? You know why? It's because we don't run the world, Don.
That's true.
Well, let's not stop at Egypt. Let's just have... You and I should just be installed as the grand, irremovable dictators of this entire joint.
Okay.
I don't mean this joint, the studio. We've already done that. I mean, like, outside here.
I can't even get an intern to, like, get me coffee.
Nah, that's true. All right.
That's all the science, by the way.
Really? Is that the end of science?
Yeah.
All right, there you go. Ah! Too much going on there.
My lord!
The science ends with a sort of clattery, cacophonous sound, apparently.
Science is going out angry.
Rick Emerson in The End of Science. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget to join us next hour for the Rick Emerson Show at rickemersonshow.com. Today, Penis Watch, Taser Watch, and Mr. Big Jim Willig. Science on the March brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them at 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609, or you can go to their website, which is SquiresElectric.com. That is SquiresElectric.com. What were we going to ask Joe Squires when he's in the studio today?
Oh, wow.
The taser. And we have a taser watch coming up
today. We're going to ask him taser stuff.
Awesome. Perfect. Because it seems like he's a guy who could maybe give us a little bit of explanation on the varying degrees of efficiency with which the taser seems to work. Because I find the whole thing very puzzling.
I have no idea even where to start asking him questions because he knows everything about electricity and I know nothing. So pretty much anything I would ask him would sound really, really stupid.
I want to know if that thing about Ben Franklin and the kite and the key is true. That's what I want to know.
Okay.
Because I have no idea right now.
That's really what you got on
seriously,
tap for him.
If I had to, like, you put a gun to my head and asked me to tell you whether or not that story is apocryphal, I don't think I could. I don't think I have any sense.
I want to ask him where he got Donna from. Because Donna is just awesome.
A farm somewhere.
Donna is the most delightful and strange woman ever. And just endlessly helpful and nice.
They got her from some sort of a farm or a lab where they grow quirky next-door neighbors for NBC sitcoms.
I mean, endlessly nice and sweet and helpful. And, I mean, she came and told me that I'd left my car lights on yesterday and then actually took my keys and went down and turned my lights off for me because she's that nice. And then she'll turn around and then she'll just say something about penises.
Yeah.
That'll make you, like, sort of jerk back and go, what?
Yeah.
She's delightful.
She does sort of seem... She's like I referenced her one time as being a little bit like Edie McClurg, but it's not. It's like she's half Edie McClurg, half Betty White.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, like she ought to be popping in on the Hogan family and seducing one of the, you know, like the husband when nobody's around.
I could see her taking out like giant crocodiles with her shotgun.
We should probably quit talking.
Okay.
Squires Electric, you can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. No job too small or too large if it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business. They can make sure it's done right and done right the first time, saving you time and money. 503-252-1609 or call squireselectric.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Our friend Pone Tony on the Twitter says, listening to Legion of News with your host, Rick Emerson. Invisible Paid.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So, thank you. All right. Drug smugglers are using an ancient invention as a new way to move marijuana across the border from Mexico to Arizona. The discovery of two drug catapults in the Mexican state of Sonora marks the latest twist in the cat-and-mouse game traffickers play with authorities. U.S. National Guard troops operating a remote surveillance system at the Naco Border Patrol Station said they observed several people preparing a catapult and launching packages over the fence last week.
It's not even cat and mouse. It's like cat and jumping flea.
Yes. It's a jumping bean, meow, if you will.
See, I wasn't going to go that route.
A Mexican Army officer says the 3-yard-tall catapult was found about 20 yards from the U.S. border on a flatbed towed by a sports utility vehicle. The officer said the catapult was capable of launching 4.5 pounds of marijuana at a time. Soldiers seized 35 pounds of marijuana, the vehicle, and the catapult.
So the catapult is on... Where is the catapult relative to where the cops are?
Well, they were about 20 yards from the border.
So the catapult is on that side,
right,
of the border. And
they've got a 3-yard-tall catapult mounted on the back of an SUV. And
okay,
then they can launch about 4.5 pounds of marijuana at a time over the fence into the United States.
Okay. And so then it lands. Here's why that's impressive. It's impressive because, first of all, how would you even calculate where that's going to land? I mean, that seems to require more more scientific knowledge of mathematical skill than I certainly possess.
You know who can figure that out? Space aliens.
I guess. Or maybe that's just one of those things where
They do come from... Many of them are descended from Mayans.
Maybe this is one of those things where they just get like a Walter White... Oh, you don't watch Breaking Bad, though. Where they get like a Walter White type, though, to just figure out... And he's there, and he's got, you know, and he's got drafting paper and a protractor and a compass. And he's saying, okay, so no, two more degrees. No, the counterweight's got to be 3 pounds, not two. No, Ted, no! Ah, crap, now we got to start over again. Give me a trebuchet! And then, but they're creating some sort of catapult, and then they got to... Because you got to shoot the drugs into a place where there's then the guy's going to be there to pick it up. Or otherwise you're just flinging your drugs, you know, underneath the dresser where you'll never find them.
See, what I would do, if I was going to do this, I would get an even more powerful catapult. So that it could send it even further.
To the moon.
So that you could be even further away from the fence, so there's less chance of getting caught. But I would put a GPS tracker in my package of marijuana, so that then the guys on the other side could then just find it wherever it lands.
Well, putting a GPS doesn't help. That only tells the drugs where they are. And the drugs can't really think.
You'd put
one of those magical movie Michael Bay GPS trackers on there that you can hold a thing in your hand and go, it's 20 degrees that way.
Well, obviously,
those don't really exist.
There's ways to track things.
How? I'm saying you said if you were going to do this, and I'm saying, like, if you were going to do it, like, what would you put
in
it?
Well, if you can find other people using GPS, if you can find if geocaching things and stuff like that, can't you put something in something else so that someone can find it with a GPS?
But you don't
GPS?
Find the geocaching thing because there's, like, something in it. It's because they tell you where it is.
Oh.
Geocaching is where they just say, like, it's here's the location of it, and then you just go there.
Okay, now we are discovering why I would not be successful as a drug smuggler.
Okay. I think the law enforcement officials are breathing a sigh of relief, by the way, at this moment, because for a minute it looked like you were going to hatch some brand new master scheme that could never be thwarted.
Well, Dawn's no mastermind. We can take the pin off of the map at her house.
You were listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next hour at RickEversonShow.com, you'll get to hear more of our madcap hilarity and intellect at work. That is...
And my master criminal plans.
The next hour's program will be marked by any number of different modes of hilarity, including but not limited to a penis watch, taser watch, and Mr. Big Jim Willig. So that's at RickEversonShow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
And maybe you'll tell more of those Harry Potter Yo Mama jokes.
Can I just tell you this? I almost did another Harry Potter joke to begin this hour, and then I realized that it would have just made no sense at all. So,
no. Yeah. Trying to find a good news story here for. Here we go. The mayor of New Jersey, a New Jersey town, not New Jersey, because that's a whole state.
Uh-huh.
The mayor of a New Jersey town has been indicted for insurance fraud after crashing into a parked car and attempting to blame the damage to his own car on the blizzard. Garrett Smith was reportedly driving home from a bar early Christmas Day when he smashed into a parked car and then drove home, leaving a trail of automotive fuel behind him. Police followed the trail to Smith's door, where the Democrats insisted that a snowplow driver was responsible for the damage. A day after announcing his candidacy for his third term in office, Smith was indicted on 3 counts of insurance fraud and leaving the scene of a crime, which could land him up to 10 years in prison.
Well, you got to know that whenever there's some sort of a natural disaster, some sort of force majeure that just comes out of nowhere, that there's got to be a whole bunch of people going like, oh, thank God, now I've got a chance to, you know, and then they've got a body in their basement and they're just kicking it out, you know, like when the flood hit New Orleans. You know, there was a bunch of people who were just, I've been wondering how I was going to get rid of this barrel full of human remains that's been sitting in the attic. Now I know. And then as the river comes by, they just go and drop it off the roof and, you know, goodbye. And it's gone. And so.
Well, in Michigan, there's this whole thing called Devil's Night.
Yeah.
And it's what, the night after Halloween, or it is Halloween?
I believe it is the night before Halloween.
And people run around and set stuff on fire. And apparently that has become, like, classically the highest night for actual arson. Because, you know, there's a lot of people just running around setting stuff on fire just to cause mayhem. So if you're going to set your business on fire and, like, you know, file an insurance claim, that's the night to do it, apparently. And I guess, like, the arson investigations, you know, for Devil's Night are just huge every single year.
You can just blame it on Michael Wincott.
Or ruffians, hooligans. Yeah. You just blame it on hooligans. An Oregon City man was sentenced to 7 years in prison after pleading guilty to 5 counts of first-degree encouraging child sexual abuse. Neil Patrick McKinney entered the plea January 14th and was sentenced today in Clackamas County Circuit Court. He was arrested last September after a forensic computer investigation that included the Oregon Department of Justice's Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force and the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office. AG's office had received word from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children that 8 videos depicting child porn had been uploaded to a computer with an email and username that belonged to Kent McKinney. He belonged to an online social networking group called Ozito Azul or something, which had 9 videos and 59 images of child porn uploaded from a member with McKinney's internet service provider number. He, of course, by the way, had been a Clackamas County school bus driver.
Of course.
Of course. So, subpoenas were issued, he was arrested, and now he's going to prison for 7 years.
I wonder, never mind. You know, FM. I was going to continue to ruminate on that story, but you know what, it doesn't matter. We'll move on. Here's Don Taylor.
Clackamas County deputies say they arrested a 21-year-old Portland man accused of robbing someone during a Craigslist sale. Deputies say the victim responded to a Craigslist post advertising a PlayStation 3. When the victim met Randon Sims to buy the video game system, Sims grabbed the $250 payment and drove away. The victim hung onto the car and was dragged more than 50 feet. He suffered minor injuries. Authorities tracked Sims down and arrested him on the charge of first-degree robbery.
That is so great. I mean, it's great because, first of all, it has a happy ending. And that the guy isn't horrifically injured. He has minor injuries, but I mean, but those are badass minor injuries.
Yeah.
Because you show up and the guy goes, yoink, and grabs your money, and then he goes, no! and you may not have my hard-earned $250. And then, in my head, of course, it's like an Impala, you know, or a Monte Carlo.
Sweet.
Or something. Yeah, it's just like a Lincoln Town Car kind of, you know, tearing through the streets of San Francisco. And the guy is, you know, just being...
This great Quincy Jones music is playing.
Totally, just being swung out to the side of the car as they go around a corner and through a fruit stand somewhere.
A woman with a baby leaps back on the sidewalk.
Man holding a grocery sack with a baguette sticking out of the top has to jump back onto the sidewalk.
The crosswalk lady is about to walk a bunch of kids across the street and stops and everyone scatters.
Pulls the dog back on a leash and... A Quinn Martin production. And then at the end, the cops find the guy anyway. Yeah. I hope they just took the guy's PlayStation, if there ever was one, and just gave it to this guy. It's like, here for your pain
they
and suffering.
Should.
Here you go.
That's what I would do if I was a cop.
All right.
I would never be a cop. Lane County has paid $20,000 to settle a lawsuit accusing a sheriff's deputy of coercing an 11-year-old boy to falsely confess to shooting a neighbor's dog. Acting Lane County Administrator Leanne Richardson said the county settled because it would have cost more to defend the case in court. The Register Guard in Salem reports the school district settled its share of the case last month for $10,000 plus $12,000 in attorney's fees. Neither the county nor the school district admitted employees did anything wrong. A sheriff's deputy, school principal, and security officer questioned Levi Dunn in 2008 until he falsely confessed to shooting a dog. The Lane County District Attorney's Office dropped an animal abuse charge after tests showed the pellet gun he allegedly used could not have killed the
dog. Do they ever figure out who actually did it?
That I don't know.
Okay, so but it was certainly wasn't this kid.
Right.
This is one of those things where they just kept him in a room, shined a light on him until it just cracked. You're right, I did it all. Me and Muggsy.
Yeah. A sheriff's deputy, a security officer, and the school's principal.
Well, that sounds
basically
legal.
Basically bullying this kid in a room until he confesses to something he didn't do.
All right.
Let's do entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Friday, January 28th, 2011. Speaking of entertainment, we should note that we were discussing this earlier. I'm not quite sure how they handled Movie BS with Baron Snyder this morning at Cascadia.fm because Eric D. Snyder is, he was probably on the phone or something, or they pre-taped it or they had a guest host. He's at the Sundance Film Festival. We may or may not be speaking with him today. We're not quite certain about that, but we will endeavor to figure that out as soon as possible and let everybody know. But that may be coming up as part of next hour's Rick Emerson radio program, rickemersonshow.com. Here's Don Taylor.
Ryan Reynolds' ex-wife Scarlett Johansson attended the Iron and Wine concert Wednesday in Los Angeles with actor Justin Long. They're friends, said the actress's rep to People magazine. They've worked together. They're not dating.
Wait a minute. Justin Long. Wait.
He's the Mac on the with John Hodgman in the Mac and PC ads.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I just always like to know who's putting it to Scarlett Johansson so I know who to hate. Just need to know where to focus my anger.
Charlie Sheen is out of the hospital and back home. I know that you were concerned about him. Publicist Stan Rosenfeld says Sheen left a Los Angeles hospital Thursday night. Sheen had been taken to the hospital earlier in the day complaining of severe stomach pains. Rosenfeld says the actor has a history of hernia problems.
Well, it's... See, here's the thing, is that might not be false. I mean, that might in fact be true. And that's just one of those things, if you're the publicist, you're just having some flack, like, just comb through the records, trying to find anything. Anything that's real that they can blame this on. Just that's any true. Small issue, you know, he may have had. If he had some sort of an ingrown fingernail at one point, you just find that, and that's what you point. You hang everything right on that.
I'm old, and I have no idea who I'm talking about. Them Crooked Vultures frontman Josh Homme and his wife Brody Dal are expecting their second child this summer.
Here's the thing about you being old. That's not false. That is in fact the way of the world. You do know who you're talking about. You're doubly old, actually, because you do know who you're talking about. You just don't know that you know who you're talking about. What does Rick Emerson mean by that? I'll tell you. So that is a supergroup. He is from Queens of the Stone Age. The other two members of that group are Dave Grohl from Foo Fighters and John Paul Jones of Led Zeppelin.
Okay, so I do know who I'm talking about. I just didn't know that I knew what I was talking about because I'm old.
You were inadvertently correct there.
Anyway, apparently he's fertile. And his wife is knocked up again.
It's because they sleep under a tiki.
Is that true?
It is.
Oh. The things you know. An actor who starred as one of the two California highway officers in the 1970s series Chips was sentenced Friday to serve 3 years probation for conspiring to commit securities fraud. U.S. District Judge James I. Cohn imposed the sentence on Larry Wilcox, 63, who had faced a maximum prison term of 5 years. Wilcox must also perform 500 hours of community service and pay a fine of $100. I think we got an individual who is truly remorseful, Cohn said. He should not be punished because of his celebrity status. Wilcox played Officer John Baker on the show, opposite Eric Estrada as Ponch.
I was going to say, he's the guy who's not Ponch,
right.
Basically.
He wiped away tears as he addressed the court before sentencing. I spent 63 years putting my signature on my life, he said. I betrayed my core values when I did what I did. I am deeply sorry.
And what? He did what?
He was involved in several kickback operations run by more than a dozen small company stock promoters, according to the SEC. The promoters were caught in an FBI undercover sting operation offering to pay kickbacks to pension fund managers or stockbrokers for using clients' funds to fund penny stocks.
See, but that doesn't make any sense when compared to the $100 fine that he got.
Yeah, that's because he cooperated with federal authorities.
Oh, it's because he's a stool pigeon.
He's a snitch. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know what happens to snitches, Don.
You think he would know after being, on Chips?
Well, I think he does know after being on Chips. If you cooperate with the man, they go easy on you.
Yeah, I
wonder if
true.
He had a surreal moment where he was sitting there and the cops were just giving him the whole, now look, we know that it was all Rico who did this. We know that you're just the patsy. If you cooperate with us, we can make things go easy. Can't we, Punch? Yes, we can, John. I wonder if they were tempted to get, like a white cop and a Mexican cop to come in together and just sort of stare at him for a while, and then give him, you know, just to see if they could just make his mind snap. Some guys in tight-fitting polyester pants.
Sean Diddy Combs will guest star in an episode of the CBS series Hawaii Five-0, where he'll play an NYPD detective who's searching for the men who harmed his family. Combs will train with a Navy SEAL to prepare for his role.
Okay.
That's all the entertainment.
Really?
It's kind of a sad day for entertainment news, really.
Even with the Sundance Film Festival continuing to unfold?
Pretty much. There's a lot of... Well, here, actually, you might find this interesting. Javier Bardem has been offered the lead role in The Dark Tower, a film version of Stephen King's series, series.
So the... And the lead role being... The gunslinger. Not Randall Flagg.
No, the gunslinger.
Wow.
And the picture will be directed by Ron Howard.
Okay. I have no problem with that.
So, yeah, kind of bland.
You said Ron Howard, though, as though that was just going to be...
Ron Howard is very competent, but he does have a tendency to just kind of be blandly competent.
it.
Yeah, see, here's the thing.
I'd like to see something a little more stylized, but then...
No, and I was watching a Ron Howard film last night, as a matter of fact.
Were you? Which one?
I was watching The Paper.
That's a very good
one. It's one of my favorite movies of the 90s. I don't want to say it's one of my favorite movies of all time. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. I don't know. But it's one of my favorite movies of the 90s, and it's one of my favorite Ron Howard films. And I got to tell you this, I love Michael Keaton. I love that guy. I'm like the biggest Michael Keaton fan, and that's not a thing you hear a lot of people say, which is strange. Michael Keaton's one of those guys that everybody sort of knows, and they know him on sight, and they usually know his name. You know, you show a picture of him, people go, oh, yeah, Mr. Mom, that Keaton guy. And it's also strange to think that Michael Keaton was an A-list actor at one point, and I'm not saying that as a knock. It's just that he doesn't seem... Like, he's not a, he doesn't have the leading man good looks in a traditional way. He's not a flashy actor. I mean,
he was quite excellent this past year as Ken in Toy Story 3.
And also in Cars, and I believe Cars 2. He does a lot of voiceover work, which I didn't really realize. And I didn't know that he had moved into directing quite as much as he has. He was also, he's also done a number of made for, this whole thing is turning into just sort of an apology for the career of Michael Keaton. But he's done a bunch of made-for-TV things. He did Live from Baghdad for HBO with Helena Bonham Carter, which was fantastic. And he did a miniseries called The Company about the CIA, which is great as well. But I was watching The Paper, and I was thinking about Ron Howard. And it's funny that you describe him as... I think we're... Same thing, two different ways to describe it. You're talking about Ron Howard being a sort of... generically competent director or utilitarian director, whereas I would say that he makes traditional... Big screen Hollywood fare.
Well, he is consistently good. I mean, I would say that I have to give Ron Howard a lot of credit because he made those Da Vinci Code movies actually watchable.
Watchable. Yeah.
When the source material they come from is so abysmally horrible. So, I mean, he's very, very good at what he does. He's just really, he's not a particularly stylish director or flashy in any way.
His movies always look big, though, is the thing. And when I say he makes traditional-looking films, I don't mean that they're boring or even generic to me. But to me, Ron Howard films always look like they're from a slightly different era. They always look as though you got a guy from the 50s and had him make a contemporary film. Like you froze some director in the 50s and thawed him out now and said, I want you to make this movie about firefighters.
I can see that.
So I got no problem with him. I think that could be good. And here's the other thing about Ron Howard is that I think he's the kind of guy that can surprise you every now and again. Like with the Da Vinci Code movies, where you think, well, this is it. Like, nobody can make this dreck watchable. There's nobody who can turn this into a movie that I would possibly... find interesting at all.
Just wondering if they're thinking about turning this into a franchise then. Because there are so many books in that series.
Yeah.
And if you make a movie about the first book in the series, obviously you're thinking about the long term.
Well, and they must because Stephen King is such a marketable brand name anyway. And all of the movies, I mean, by and large, the movies made of Stephen King books are just terrible. So they have been trying for years and years and years to find the magic combination of director and book and, you know, and adaptation that really works. And then when they make it, when they get it done, like Shawshank Redemption, it's all still only a one shot. So I would imagine that they're going to put everything they possibly can into this movie. Because if you can get Ron Howard, who's a marketable name, Javier Bardem, who's an Academy Award winning actor and who the ladies love, if you can get Stephen King, and if you can have, like, 97 books in the series, that is, like, you'll need to create new mints to make the money. The mints you have now won't be sufficient.
Now, if Ron Howard will just step away from his fixation on having hack Akiva Goldsman write his screenplays for him, then maybe you might have something awesome.
She's Dawn Taylor, kids. That's your entertainment news for Friday, January 28th, 2011. That means that is your Legion of News. For Friday, January 28th, 2011. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next hour, The Rick Emerson Show at rickemersonshow.com. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or legionofnews.com, also on your mobile device. At the news desk, it is Dawn Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Aguilar, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. We will join you Monday at noon for another exciting installment of this fine program. Until then, have a safe and satisfying Friday and weekend. We'll see you Monday at noon for another
Legion of News!
Only on Cascadia.fm.